We've all done it. Stock our fridge with leafy greens and good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice quality nutrition for the convenience of takeout. Keep your body and mind nourished all day with a whole body meal shake from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But the best part? It actually tastes delicious. With 6 indulgent flavors to choose from, it's easy to make a superfood-packed shake. From chocolate, vanilla, and chai, to matcha, coconut acai, and strawberry, you've got endless ways to personalize your Ka'Chava. Whether you prefer it straight up or enjoy adding fruit, peanut butter, nut milk, or even iced coffee, with every 2 scoops of Ka'Chava, you're getting 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags with code NEWS at Ka'Chava.com. That's 30% off for a limited time at kachava.com, code NEWS. We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Ka'Chava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Ka'Chava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to Ka'Chava.com and use code NEWS. That's kachava.com, code NEWS.
Welcome to the 326th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a weekly review of Patrick's weekend predictions, our look at week 11 of college football action and week 10 in the NFL, our weekly look at the NBA, and our first recap of college basketball with a look back at the first week plus a day or two of college basketball action. Let's jump right in with a look at Patrick's weekend predictions. Starting in college football, Patrick went 3-1. In the NFL, Patrick went 2-2. In the NBA, Patrick went 3-1, and keeping that pattern in NCAA basketball, Patrick went 2-2. So that means Patrick's overall record for his predictions this week was 10-6, and it brings his overall record to 1,375-863. That's a 61.4% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I'll start with the newest sport of predictions just because I feel like it deserves a breakdown. With college basketball, I think if you look at the games that I picked, I feel pretty confident about my 2-2 because I picked number 25 North Carolina, who beat number 19 Kansas 87-74. So that one wasn't close. And then Vanderbilt went on the road and beat UCF by 12, 105-93. So the two teams I picked won by double digits, whereas the two teams I picked that lost, Arkansas, who was on the road at Michigan State, lost 69-66. And then Alabama beat number 5 St. John's, who I picked 103-96. So I actually feel pretty good about the fact that the two teams that I picked that lost in very, very close games, were literally a few shots that they made or missed came down to the end of the game or was the deciding factor in the game. So I don't feel bad about that at all going 2-2, obviously. In college basketball, even though it's a more unpredictable sport, it's one of my higher winning percentages overall. So would like to keep that up this season. Don't think it's going to not be kept up this season. Just really early and hard to I mean, you know, let's call it how it is. It's very hard to predict a game between Alabama and St. John's when both of them have played a team that's sub 300 in D1. So it's very, very hard to actually judge how good those teams are off that first game. And this was basically, I think this was the second game for all 8 of these teams. But you know, as the weeks move on, things will get a little more clear. Some more interesting matchups coming up this weekend. And then, of course, it's going to be Feast Week. So a lot of interesting games coming up in the near future. In the NBA, finally had a good week. Again, just feeling out the season a little bit. This time I'm actually feeling a lot more confident. I felt more confident before the week started about how these predictions would go anyway. But the Magic beat the Celtics 123-110. The Bucks beat the Bulls 126-110. And the Nuggets beat the Warriors 129-104. My stubbornness pays off because I picked the Nuggets to beat the Warriors once. They lost in overtime. Thought they'd get their revenge a week later, and they did. The only game that I got wrong after those three that were right were the Spurs beating the Rockets 121-110. I had the Rockets winning that game. Then in the NFL, the Patriots went on the road and beat the Buccaneers 28-23. I honestly just thought there's no way that the Patriots were going to win 7 games in a row. I guess this team is maybe being underestimated a little bit. And the Buccaneers on the other end, coming off of a bye week. So you'd expect that, you know, Patriots 6-game winning streak, Buccaneers at home off a bye week, should be a Buccaneers win. But instead, maybe the bye week killed their momentum a little bit. And the Patriots escaped with that win, so I got that one wrong. The Rams beat the 49ers 42-26. I always hate picking my, you know, a team that I like in a game, because then I'll be really upset when they lose. But the Rams were not going to lose this game, based on the fact that they lost to Mac Jones and the Niners earlier in the season in very fluky fashion, with fumbles and overtime and missed fourth downs and all that. The Rams just were not going to lose this game. Matt Stafford's playing way too well right now to let that happen. The Chargers beat the Steelers 25-10. No revenge factor here, but I felt the same way about this game, even though I knew the Steelers would kind of take over SoFi and basically have home field advantage. They're just not better than the Chargers. They're not even close to it. So pick the Chargers, got that one right. And then finally on Monday Night Football, the Eagles beat the Packers 10-7, which I got wrong. Really, really weird game, might I say. And then in college football, the final sport that I predicted, of course, the only game I got wrong was the Friday night clash between Tulane and Memphis, where Tulane won 38-32 on the road, further just messing up that already messed up picture in the American Athletic Conference. And then the games that I got right, number 3, Texas A&M beat number 22, Missouri, 38-17. Number 8, Texas Tech beat number 7, BYU, 29-7. And number 9, Oregon beat number 20, Iowa, 18-16. So overall, like I said, or like we said earlier, 10-6, good week in predictions for me.
All right. Well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will, as always, be on our social media handles at 4th and 24. Let's now turn our attention to a more detailed look at Week 11 college football action. Patrick talked briefly about some of his predictions, but let's do a little deeper dive into some of those key games.
Well, we'll start off with a ranked upset. Wisconsin keeps their bowl eligibility hopes alive at 3-6 because they beat number 23 Washington. So Washington falls to 3-3 in the Big Ten. I really wanted to mention this game because Wisconsin's punter was the leading passer for them in this game, which is just ridiculous. And somehow Washington still lost. But anyway, terrible, terrible, terrible loss for Washington. And almost another terrible loss was Auburn going on the road at Vanderbilt and forcing overtime. Auburn actually led this game 20-10 at the half. Vandy had to have a second half comeback at home to bring this one to overtime, where then they got a stop. Vanderbilt scored a touchdown, and the game ended with a Vanderbilt 45-38 victory in overtime. But not too impressed with the Commodores this weekend. Definitely don't look like a playoff team. Maybe if you strip the SEC logo away from them, they might not even be ranked this week. That's a different story though, because Cal beat number 15 Louisville, 29-26. Cal gets to a bowl game at 6-4 now. Louisville, meanwhile, big issue for them in the ACC title race, losing that game as they now have two ACC losses, at 7-2, 4-2 in the conference. And then Wake Forest went on the road and beat number 14 Virginia. So number 14 and number 15 in the ACC both go down. That was Virginia's first ACC loss of the season, second overall. Wake moves to 6-3, so they make a bowl game. That was kind of unexpected heading into the year. But they're six. They won that game 16-9, so just completely stifled the Virginia offense, which really isn't surprising because North Carolina even did that last week. So not too crazy, but Virginia was going to lose at some point. Just didn't know to who. Happened to come this week. Then you have number 9 Oregon, who beat number 20 Iowa by the margin of a safety. And why is that important? Well, because Iowa messed up a snap on a punt in the first quarter, and it turned into a safety. So Oregon literally did win by the margin of the safety that they got in the first quarter. It was especially important because had they not gotten that safety, they would have had 16 points on the board, and Iowa, instead of going for two at the end of the game, would have just kicked an extra point to make it 17-16. And of course, Oregon technically still could have driven down the field and kicked the field goal to win the game. But without having those 2 points, definitely changes the outlook of things a little bit. As also, actually, I think if you do the math, that means that that field goal would have actually not even tied the game. So changes the math a lot, changes the scope of the game a lot. But instead of being 12-7 at the half, could have been 10-7, et cetera, et cetera. Big domino effect from that safety. It was also really the first bit of momentum that Oregon got in the game, but a really close game. Iowa proving why they should be a ranked team. why the AP poll voters are out of their minds for not ranking them all season long, and why the College Football Committee was right in this case on having them immediately in the top 20, despite never being ranked in the AP poll this season. But then you have the playoff committee being proven wrong because number 8 Texas Tech beat number 7 BYU 29-7. Texas Tech was favored by 13.5 in this game. So there weren't many people who did think that Texas Tech was worse than BYU. But you know what? They weren't ranked that way. And Texas Tech proved that wrong this weekend, though. Just absolutely demolished BYU. 13-0 at the half. And Tech left points on the board numerous times in the first half. So, I mean, this game could have been a bigger blowout than 29-7 is what I'm going to say, to put it lightly. So really impressed with Texas Tech this weekend, but maybe I'm not even that impressed with them because I've just kind of known that this is what they've been all season, and I've been talking about it for a while, how formidable this team actually is. They're not just, you know, a contender for the Big 12 title. They're a contender for the national title because they're really, I mean, they're just really, really solid. They're a complete team, and they run an offense that's really hard to stop as well. But speaking of national title contenders, we'll end the week with two of them here. One of them struggling and one of them thriving. The first one was Indiana, who kind of struggled against Penn State. It looked like they were cruising to the win. They were up 17-7 at the half. It was 20-10 at the end of the third quarter. You thought that, you know, this was kind of the same story of Indiana, or excuse me, of Penn State against Ohio State last week, where Penn State made it 17-14 at the half, I believe, but Ohio State just kind of casually pulled away in the second half, stacked one score with another stop until it wasn't really close at all. But that didn't happen with Indiana. They turned the ball over a few times, and all of a sudden you looked up at the scoreboard, and Penn State was leading Indiana 24-20 late in the fourth quarter. It actually did require a 2-minute drill by Fernando Mendoza and the Hoosiers to actually get down the field and score the game-winning touchdown, which, I mean, was on a miraculous catch in the first place. So Indiana really did barely escape with this win at Penn State, but they got the win regardless, and that's what matters. They're still undefeated at 10-0, and also still undefeated at 9-0 is Texas A&M because they went on the road and smacked Missouri, who, in the same sense that Iowa should be ranked, because they can stay in games with some of the top teams in the country and also have really good wins this year. Missouri should not be ranked at all. And I have said this for a long time. Missouri and Tennessee, both of those two teams, please get them out of the rankings. Neither of them deserve to be in there. There are so many other teams, whether they're, you know, teams like Navy, or I mean, not Navy after this week, but, you know, North Texas, Tulane, any of the American teams, James Madison, even someone should be ranked instead of Missouri and Tennessee. We don't need them in the polls. Who cares about three-loss SEC teams? But A&M, really impressive team. They're just cruising through the season. I mean, this was a 14-0 game at the end of the first half, and they just kept scoring in the second half, actually upped their scoring volume in the second half, but gave up a bit more on defense. They're just way better than Missouri, and they're way better than a lot of the SEC, to be frank. So I really like what I'm seeing from A&M. I even moved them up this week after their performance ahead of Indiana, where I now have it Ohio State, Texas A&M, Indiana. Wouldn't be shocked if the playoff committee did the same.
Yeah, great. As you mentioned, great weekend of college football. Some really great games, including some unexpectedly great games, like the Indiana Penn State game. Few quick things I'd like to note really quick. Virginia, you mentioned they weren't able to score. Their quarterback did get knocked out of the game. They weren't able to score a touchdown. But also, crazy enough, they had their first lost fumble of the year 10 games in. They'd fumbled the ball 9 times previously and recovered all of them. So they got turnover bug with the backup quarterback. Finally lost a game. They've been living on the edge for a while. And then kudos to Cal for going for it in overtime on fourth down. They could have kicked a field goal to tie it to send into the second overtime. Instead, they play for the win on fourth down and get the touchdown and win on the road. So you always got to love you got to love seeing that. Some awesome games, as always in college football. It never disappoints. Speaking of some awesome games and not disappointing. Let's move on to the NFL, where some games were awesome, and some teams were very disappointing.
Well, you might say some teams were disappointing, but overall, I mean, in a week that had some really great matchups and then some that were just lacking, every game was close. I had a really hard time actually not putting certain games on here at all, because there were some games that probably would have been mentioned in a different week that I just didn't like. The Jets only won by one possession. That one missed it. The Seahawks and the Lions both won 44-22 against decent opponents. So, could have mentioned both of those games, but there you
I
go.
was
Just
referring
threw
to the
them in really
Bills and
quickly.
I was referring to the Bills in terms of disappointing, but
Well,
let's
yes,
let you continue.
there were a lot of disappointing teams, but a lot of close games, that was my point. And speaking of disappointing teams, even in a win, the Broncos beat the Raiders 10-7 on Thursday night. Ugly, I think, is the only way I could describe this performance. This is just, I mean, for an 8-2 team to beat the 2-7 Raiders, 10-7 is, the Broncos aren't passing the eye test in most weeks. I'll just put it that way. I think there are a lot of teams that are true contenders in the league right now. And I think that the Broncos, with their record, I mean, even the Patriots, people doubted them heading into the week, but I think they won their prove it game at the Buccaneers. The Broncos, on the other hand, their best win this season is probably the win at the Eagles, that the Eagles just kind of choked. And if you look at the rest of their schedule, they've beaten the Titans, the Bengals, the Jets, the Giants, the Cowboys, the Texans, and the Raiders. Texans backup quarterback, Raiders by 3 points, Giants by one, requiring that miraculous comeback. They beat the Jets by two. This team doesn't really move me at all. And I think the good news is we're about to find out if they're really for real or not, because their next two games, well, not even actually, their next game is against the Chiefs. But that's a very important one. And then they end the season with the Packers, the Jags, the Chiefs, and the Chargers. So they're going to make the playoffs because they have two easy games in between that with the Commanders and the Raiders. They're going to make the playoffs. But the thing is, what seed are they going to get? Are they going to win this division? And even if they do win the division, do they really have what it takes to do anything with that is the real question. And this week did not look like it. But speaking of the Jaguars, talk about another team who really doesn't look the part of their record. The Jaguars were 5-3 heading into the week, and they were up 29-10 heading into the fourth quarter against the Davis Mills-led Texans, and they surrendered 26 fourth quarter points to Davis Mills and the Texans to allow the Texans to come back and steal the victory away from them. Now, in a typical year in the AFC South, that could be a division swinging game because these teams are 4-5 and 5-4. Of course, the Colts are 8-2, so that kind of puts that discussion away. But the fact of the matter is, this is still an important win in the context of the wild card, because right now, 5-4 is what gets you into the wild card. Of course, the Jags and the Chiefs are tied for that final spot currently. Then you have a team like the Ravens at 10, but they'll make their division, or they'll win their division and make the playoffs that way before they make it through the wild card. But that's a different discussion. So the Texans just staying in it, keeping in the fight, even without CJ Stroud, a very important win for them. Meanwhile, the Jaguars, just an unfortunate loss for them. It's also worth noting that this game was actually 30-29, with 10 seconds left. And the Jaguars got a first down that would have put Cam Little in his field goal range, but then they got a penalty on the play. So it got called back. And on the next play, the Texans got a scoop and score on a wild attempt at a Hail Mary by Trevor Lawrence and the Jags. So the Texans, they're lucky to come away with this win, but the Jaguars are the ones who really screwed it up. So really, I don't want to say that the Texans are lucky. They took advantage of the Jaguars just playing some really bad fourth quarter football. Speaking of playing bad football, the Panthers led the Saints at the end of the first quarter, 7-3. You thought, okay, this is a ho-hum game. It's a pretty easy one for the Panthers to win. And then all of a sudden, the Saints just completely ball out on defense, shut the Panthers out for the next three quarters. And Tyler Shuck played a really, really good game in his first career start, and he gets the win on the board for the Saints. Interesting, because of course, Shuck was a first round pick, and it was definitely debated, let's just put it that way, whether he deserved it or not as an older quarterback. And then they didn't even start him to start the year. So people were really wondering, why would you spend a first round pick on that and then just let Spencer Rattler play anyway? But here we are. He has started. He's 1-0 in his starts. They're 1-8 in other people's starts. So good start to his career for Tyler Shuck. But the Panthers, of course, really, really bad loss to take when you're really close in a divisional race and just came off a win at the Packers that should have given you a ton of momentum, but instead to just lose immediately right after that. It's a pretty rough look for the Panthers. Then you have the Patriots who beat the Buccaneers, like I said earlier. I went into it enough earlier, so I'm not going to go into it too much again. But Travion Henderson had a really, really good game against the Buccaneers. rushing defense in this game. Just had a great outing. But the Patriots moved to 8-2, still leading that division. And in fact, their division lead grew by a game this weekend because the Dolphins moved to 3-7 with a 30-13 win against the Bills. They shut the Bills out through three quarters, led them 16-0 heading into the fourth. The Bills kind of had a last gasp. They did score a touchdown to make it that could have made it a one possession game, but then they also missed 2-point conversion on that touchdown. So it stayed 16-6 instead of 16-8. And that really felt like the final moment where the Bills really had a chance. And the end of the game obviously ended 30-13 as the Dolphins tacked on two extra touchdowns in garbage time. Then you have the Ravens, who beat the Vikings 27-19. Baltimore's defense stepped up a lot at the end of this game after their offense had really carried them through the first few parts of it. And the fact of the matter is, the JJ McCarthy and Justin Jefferson connection is just broken. I don't know how that happened so early, but Jefferson gave up on routes in this game. There were some high throws that he didn't even attempt to catch that I feel like, you know, if they were the average Sam Darnold misfire, he might have made a leaping effort at least. But it felt like he was just frustrated throughout this game. And I think, you know, if you look around, ask Vikings fans, they're very much thinking the same thing. But meanwhile, for the Ravens, they started 1-5 and they were still division favorites even when they were 2-5. And now all of a sudden, they're one game out. Lamar is back. This team is rolling. Their defense is finally playing good enough football to just be competitive at the very least. And the great news for the Ravens is that they play the Browns and then the Jets in the next 2 weeks. So should be a pretty easy road to 6-5 for Baltimore. And then even after that, Bengals, Steelers, Bengals. So depending on how Joe Burrow or when Joe Burrow comes back, which is possible that he could be back for one or both or also neither of those games, the Ravens really have an opportunity to really put their stamp on things in the division, especially if they can beat the Steelers, who, of course, are the team that they are behind currently. But moving on from that game, the Bears had a comeback that ended Brian Daboll's tenure as the or tenure as the coach of the Giants. The Giants had a fourth quarter lead, 20-10, and they squandered it. The Bears scored two touchdowns in a snowy, cold game, and ended up coming back and winning 24-20. These are the types of games that, if you're a playoff hopeful, you just can't afford to lose. And the Bears did pull it out. I mean, it was rough. It wasn't an easy road, but they did get the win. They are 6-3 now on the season and still in the playoff picture, actually tied with the Lions for that for the lead in that NFC North division. Then you have the Colts, who beat the Falcons 31-25 in overtime in Dublin. Really fun game. The Colts had to get four, excuse me, had to get 12 points in the fourth quarter to bring this one to overtime, but they did. And then Jonathan Taylor walked it off with a touchdown. So great game by the Colts. They moved to 8-2 on the season. And obviously just dominating their division, dominating the AFC, really. I think right now you can make the argument they're the best team in the AFC, at least the way they're playing. They might not be as talented as teams like the Bills and the Chiefs, but the fact of the matter is, you combine record and talent, there's probably not a better team in that conference. We already talked about how the Broncos have had their fair share of struggles, even in wins, and have had an easy schedule. Colts to an extent, yes, but you know what? They're dominating most of the teams they play. So I am very high on the Colts, as most people are at this point in the year. Then you have the Rams, who beat the 49ers. Talked about it earlier. Matt Stafford, 20 passing touchdowns, zero interceptions in his last six games. Not only helping the Rams get to the top of this division, but making a case that he should be in the MVP race, if not leading it at this point. So Stafford's having an amazing season for the Rams, and the Rams just keep on winning. Still, though, tied at the top of the division because the Seahawks are also at 7-2 right now. So both of those two teams, excuse me, tied for the top of the division, very secure in the playoff race. That was the Niners at 6-4, now the first team in the wild card. Then you have the Chargers, who beat the Steelers on Sunday Night Football. We talked about that one a little bit. They're now 7-3, still one game behind the Broncos for the division lead. And then the Eagles, who beat the Packers 10-7. Very ugly game, 0-0 at the half. Both of these two teams not clicking on offense in this heavyweight matchup, but the Eagles eventually pulling out the win and moving to 7-2.
All right, that wraps up our look at the NFL and football for the week. Now let's turn our attention to some basketball action. We will start with a quick recap of the last week of action in the NBA.
In the NBA, we will start in the Eastern Conference, as always, where the Pistons are actually the first place team in the conference. They're 9-2 this season, 2 games ahead of everybody else. There's a giant pack right below them, though, which includes the Knicks, who have won 4 in a row. They're 6-3 on the season, and then the Heat, Cavs, and Bucks are all 7-4 this season. Which the Heat definitely the surprising team of that bunch, but the Cavs and the Bucks, teams that you expect to be up there. Although the Bucks, you know, they were doubted a little bit heading into the year because Giannis's supporting core just isn't as flashy as it's always been before. But right now, they're playing really well, so it hasn't mattered. Then you have the Bulls, who started the season 6-1, but have lost their last three, so they're now at 6-4. Still having a good season though so far. Then you have the Sixers, also at 6-4. The Raptors, the Haw and the Hawks, excuse me, are at 5-5. Hawks had a big comeback win last night against the Clippers to get there. The Celtics are 5-6, tied with the Magic, who are also 5-6. The Magic need to figure it out. That's all I'm going to say. They just need to play a lot better. They did beat the Celtics over the weekend in the NBA Cup, but this team, with how many moves they made in the offseason and the fact that they have been a playoff team the last 2 years, they just need to play better. Their roster is too good to be sitting below teams like the Raptors, and even the injured Celtics too. They just shouldn't be down here in the standings. Then you have the teams that should be down here in the standings: the Hornets, who are 3-7 on the season. They've lost 3 in a row. The Nets, who are 1-9. The Pacers, who are 1-9. I mean, I guess you kind of expected this team to compete a little bit, but really shows you how important Tyrese Haliburton is to the Indiana Pacers, and also Miles Turner, as they try to turn over a new leaf without Turner on the roster now that he's on the Bucks. And then finally, in last, you have the Washington Wizards, who have lost 9 in a row, despite the fact that last night they played a really good game. But they choked. They were up 5 with like 10 seconds left, maybe even less than that, against the Pistons on the road. So 1-9 could have beaten 8-2, but instead they choked the lead. It went to overtime. And despite CJ McCollum scoring 42 points on 25 shots, Cade Cunningham had 46 points on 45 shots. So not as pretty, but he did get there. And also had a triple double in the game. And the Wizards ended up losing in overtime to the Pistons. So Wizards just having a rough go of it. Kind of expected that, though, let's be honest. But in the West, you still have the dominant Oklahoma City Thunder. They are 10-1. They did finally lose a game, for what it's worth, but it took them until they got to 8-0 before they did finally lose a game. So they're headed for another dominant regular season. I don't even think Jalen Williams has played yet, but still, they're just dominating every team they play. Then you have the Spurs, who are 8-2. Didn't expect this team. They were good, obviously, before Wembanyama got injured last year, but they weren't this good before he got injured. They were a playoff team, but not a high seed contender. This team has taken its game to another level, as all their players have gotten a year older. Wemby has turned into a true MVP candidate, and De'Aaron Fox has had a full offseason to really figure out the Spurs system and gel with those players. Then you have the Nuggets, who are just playing like the Nuggets always do. They're going to claim a top seed. Like always, they're 7-2. Jokic has fallen out. You have the Lakers, who, despite LeBron still not playing a game, are 8-3, tied with the Nuggets for that third seed. Luka Doncic is just, he's been ridiculous. Even though he's only played 7 out of the 11 games, he's been ridiculous when he has been healthy. Austin Reaves has 20 points in 8 straight games, I think. So just a great season for the Lakers so far. Then you have the Rockets, who are 6-3. They're just kind of doing their thing. They haven't really struggled against anybody. They're going to keep winning games at a high level. This is a very, very powerful team. They're not going to miss the playoffs. They're going to be somewhere in this mix the whole season. Can't necessarily say definitively that they're going to be ahead of the Spurs, Nuggets, or Lakers, but they're definitely going to be in the conversation. I could say the same thing about the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have won 3 games in a row and are at 7-4. Then you have the Warriors, who are 6-5 on the season. The Suns, who were 6-5 after winning 3 in a row. And the Blazers, who are 5-5 after losing 2 in a row. And then it gets ugly in the West. You have the Grizzlies at 4-7, who are somehow in a playoff spot, followed by the Clippers at 3-6, who have lost 4 in a row. the Kings and Jazz at 3-7, the Mavericks at 3-8, who are worth noting because today they, well, today by as in like 20 minutes ago, fired Nico Harrison, which I never want to say that a GM is responsible for, you know, everything that goes on with the roster, but I mean, this was warranted. This is not about how the team is playing. This is about what Luka Doncic meant to this franchise. You can't mess up the Cooper Flagg pick, but I have to say, you can mess up all of the follow-up with it. And to build a contender around Anthony Davis and Cooper Flagg, they need a GM who can actually evaluate good pieces to put around those two. So I think it's the right move to do right now. They want to have a better GM in place for the trade deadline to make sure that they can actually get good pieces to surround Flagg with. And Nico Harrison was not that guy, to put it lightly. Pretty expected move, maybe not 11 games into the season, but it's hard to see why they wouldn't with a 3-8 start. Then you have the Pelicans at 2-8. Haven't fired anybody yet, but maybe by the end of the season they might. Just a really, really rough season in New Orleans.
All right, that ends our look at the NBA. To cap off the podcast, let's talk about the start of college basketball season.
There were only a few relevant games on the first night of the season, so it is basically just the last week. Although, on the first night of the season in Vegas, there was a tip-off event. Number 13 Arizona beat number 3 Florida 93-87. That means, of course, Florida obviously can still repeat, but they won't go undefeated while doing it. That was never going to happen in the first place, but you know, technically it could have. Arizona, though, playing an amazing game. Koa Peet looks like, I mean, I'll just put it this way. There are so many freshmen across the country that have been extremely impressive so far, and I can't get to all of them in these games. But I will say that Koa Peet in another draft class is probably an easy top five pick. And that performance would have wowed scouts. But this class is so deep in terms of freshmen that, you know, people paid attention to it, but no one was talking about him at the end of the night, despite the fact that he made his college debut against the defending national champions and had 30 points on 11 of 18 shooting, 5 assists, 7 rebounds, and 3 steals. It's ridiculous. And still wasn't even necessarily the most talked about guy after that night alone. So it's crazy what these freshmen are doing this season. It might be one of the best freshman classes of all time. And speaking of that, the however many million dollar man himself, at BYU, AJ DeBonsa, also had a great debut as BYU got their first win of the season against Villanova. They won 71-66. DeBonsa had 21 points in that game, also 6 rebounds and 3 assists, showing off how versatile he is. And this BYU team just showing off how good of a team they can be to an extent, because I do think that Villanova shouldn't really be playing this team within a few possessions. But who knows? I can't say I know too much about, well, I do know a lot about Villanova, like as a team in general, but I don't think I have a very clean read on how good they're actually going to end up being. I placed them around the bubble to start the season, but I could see them being a lot higher or a lot lower. There's a lot of potential on this team, but there's a lot of downfalls, as well. So BYU remains to be seen. I think the jury's still out on how good that team meanwhile, I think Arizona and Florida, both of those teams you're looking at, very, very high, top of the line teams heading into the season. Then you have number 6 Duke, who beat Texas 75-60. Another important freshman in this game, of course, Cam Boozer. Well, really, both the Boozer twins. But Cam Boozer struggled in the first half, honestly. He didn't score in the first half, but got it going late in the game. And most importantly, Isaiah Evans was the guy that Duke needs him to be if they're going to be anything that's stellar this season. He had 23 points, 4 of 8 from 3. Just a great game for him. And he's the guy that, you know, last year couldn't really find consistent playing time with as stacked of a rotation as Duke had, but definitely was one of the most talented guys on an already stacked roster last year. So not surprising to see him playing well early. A close call early. Oregon beat Hawaii 60-59. A little too close for the Ducks' liking. Then going to some games that I had in predictions. You had number 25 North Carolina, who beat number 19 Kansas 87-74. Caleb Wilson, another one of those guys like Koa Peet that, you know, kind of off the board in terms of number one picks or candidates for that spot, but he's a really, really good player. And I have been really, really impressed with him in the exhibition games And then in this game, and also on the other end of things, Darren Peterson, who was one of the top three recruits in the country heading into the season, also had a great game himself, 22 points of his own, but actually was outdueled by Caleb Wilson, who had 24-7, four assists and four steals, and was 9 of 12 from the floor. So incredibly efficient to get to those 24 points. I mean, 24 points on 12 shots is ridiculous. And Wilson just has played really, really well to start the season for North Carolina. And it's really a sign that maybe this Tar Heels team can defy expectations and be one of the top teams in the ACC. We'll just have to see as the season rolls on, but they're off to a good start. Then you have Georgetown to beat Maryland on the road, 70-60, a good win for the Hoyas as Ed Cooley looks to finally turn things around there. Alabama beat St. John's, Michigan State beat Arkansas, as we talked about in the predictions. So not going to go into those games too much, although I will say Alabama looking really, really good to start the season. And the challenges don't stop there. They really have stacked their schedule like Nate Oates always does. After playing St. John's, their next three games, Purdue, Illinois, Gonzaga. So doesn't get any easier, like I said. Purdue is a true home game, though, for Alabama. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in that game. That's on Thursday night. Trey Coffman-Wren has been injured for Purdue. So if he can't suit up, Alabama's probably going to win that game. If he can, still think Alabama could win it. I don't know if they will, but really, really interesting game early in the season. And also, as of the beginning of that stretch, Alabama, depending on where you looked, was the underdog in all four games. And they've already won one, and they look poised to win at least another one of those two. So really, really interesting how things change quickly. But also, even if Alabama starts the season 2-3, they're still a really good team, as long as they're keeping those games close, because those are three top 20 teams that they're playing. So thought it was worth noting that, very important as that game goes on. And speaking of Gonzaga, they beat Oklahoma 83-68 in their first game against a good opponent this season. So Gonzaga starting off the season on the right foot. Memphis beat San Francisco 76-70, a good win for the Tigers, who have a little bit more of an uncertain outcome than they normally do. Then you have Virginia Tech, who beat Providence 107-101 in overtime. And speaking of freshmen, international players in general, this is a team to look out for, because Nicolas Avdalis, I mean, he was at the NBA draft combine, didn't really get many looks, but I think 33 points and six assists in your first game against a power conference team, that might turn some heads a little bit. So watch out for Avdalis. This is a 6'9 guard who can really play point guard out of Greece. He kind of moves like Luka Doncic out there. He doesn't have the same size, and I'm not going to say that he's that good of a player, but that's who his playing style reminds me a lot of. And he's one of many, many international players that are making an impact this year already. But a team that doesn't have a lot of international players, a lot of transfers on it, is Indiana, and they have had a great start to the season. They beat Marquette 100-77. Indiana's first 100-point game since 2023. I think their first season where they've had two 90-point games in a row since Tom Crean was still the coach, which is funny because he was actually broadcasting the game, this game on Sunday. But a great start for the Hoosiers as their transfer portal all-star squad starts off their era, starts off the new era pretty well. Then you have Oklahoma State, who kind of came out of nowhere to just destroy Texas A&M 87-63. They look like a tournament team very early on in the season. North Texas beat Loyola Chicago 64-62 in some important mid-major action. Baylor beat Washington 78-69. Both of these teams, a lot of potential, a lot of draft picks. Hans Steinbeck, for Washington. It's a great player. Tunde Yusufu on Baylor, also one of those great freshmen. So there's a lot of talent on both of these teams, and there's a lot of potential for Baylor to actually outperform expectations, because the bar is relatively low this year for what Scott Drew and his bunch are used to. But so far, they're playing a little bit better than it. Washington, meanwhile, still a tournament hopeful, and they just need to gel a little bit. No Desmond Claude in this game yet either, so one of their experienced leaders still hasn't played in a game. So a lot to look forward to if you're a Washington fan. And then finally, number 16, Iowa State beat Mississippi State 96-80. A great start to the season for the Cyclones, who had a little bit more of an unsure outlook heading into the season, but TJ Otzelberger's bunch always finds a way to play quality basketball, and it is no different to start this season.
Okay, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, November 18th, where we will once again talk about Patrick's weekend predictions, review week 12 of college football and week 11 in the NFL, have our weekly look at basketball as we did today with NBA action and college basketball action. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's picks for next weekend's games, which, as I mentioned earlier, will be posted as always on Thursday on our social media accounts. That's at 4th and 24. And also check out Patrick's other content, including his bracketology that will be posted periodically during the season. All of that on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, plus the number 24. Thank you for listening.